Hey, deep fried fans. Ever had a deep fried hot dog? Well, me neither, but there's a famous place in Clifton, New Jersey called Rutt's Hut that specializes in fried hot dogs. Next time you're over that way, stop in and tell them Ellie Mae sent you. I'm here to announce show number 37. In this episode, Keith and Woody sit down with Brian Noyes. Brian is chief architect at iDesign, Microsoft regional director for the Mid-Atlantic region, and a connected systems MVP. He is a frequent top-rated speaker at conferences worldwide, including Microsoft TechEd, Dev Connections, DevTeach, VS Live, and others. He is the author of Developing Applications with Windows Workflow Foundation, Smart Client Deployment with ClickOnce, and Data Binding with Windows Forms 2.0. Okay, deep fried fans, let's grab that glass of sweet tea and get ready for some Gumpology.
Hey folks, welcome back to Deep Fried Bites, your favorite podcast on the internet. What's up, Mr. Woody?
Hey, good. How about you, Keith?
Oh man, I just got done mowing the yard.
Oh, that's
on
nice.
The old John Deere.
Yeah.
And I put out 6 loads of red mulch in the yard this past week.
I guess you have deposits in the wife bank, so in the marriage bank.
Actually, I don't know if she would really care, to be honest. No. She told me a long time ago, I take care of the inside, you take care of the outside.
Oh, well, that's good.
You know, the only bad thing about that arrangement, though, is she doesn't really go outside much. And so I always get, you know, the argument that, well, you're always inside, and so you're always messing up my space, you know.
Well, that might be true.
I tell her, I'm like, you don't have freaking hurricanators, you know, out in the middle of the house. I have to go out and deal with stuff, you know. I have the weather elements and everything. So anyway, all right, dude, what do you say we bring our guest
on
today?
Let's bring Brian on.
We've got a great one today, Woody. We've got Brian Noyes, who is a regional director, connected systems MVP. He's out of the Atlantic region, and he goes to conferences and speaks everywhere and everything. I'm sure most people heard his bio from Ellie Mae earlier. Well, Brian, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
glad to be
thanks,
here.
Thanks, Brian, for coming on.
It's really great to get you on finally, Brian. You're a wealth of information. I see you like all over in all the different places, TechEd and DevTeach and all over the place. And even though we've both been to all of those places or a lot of them, we have never physically met yet.
People are always telling me they see me all over the place, but I'm always feeling like I'm not doing enough stuff.
Well, that's just your drive. It's your passion, right? It's what you love to do.
I guess.
Yep. Yeah. Well, today, folks, we're going to talk about Workflow Foundation. We have not had anybody really discuss Workflow Foundation before. As a connected systems MVP myself, Workflow and WCF and BizTalk and those types of things fall underneath that expertise. And so today we thought we would sit down and talk, you know, some different topics of workflow, kind of get some vibes on where it's at, where it's going, what kind of futures we can look forward to. And so Brian's going to fill us in. So Brian, you know, one of the things when I talk about workflow out there is people aren't really excited about workflow for some reason because they think of it, you know, sort of the technology as another drag and drop. Why do you think people don't really give it a fair shake?
I think there's a number of factors in play there. One of the biggest ones is, like you said, it looks really attractive when you first see it because you know, get this draggy droppy and you have kind of this, you know, very descriptive diagram that tells you exactly what's going to happen at your system at a high level. But it's that high level part that's actually sort of a barrier for a lot of people, because as programmers, we're used to thinking about lines of code and statements and code. And you really have to be more of an architect brain to step back from the problem and think about the sort of the high level execution paths through your system, not the line by line execution paths. And so it really, you know, to use workflow and to actually feel comfortable using it, you have to basically think in a very different way than you would when you sit down and start writing lines of code. So I think that's one of the biggest barriers, is just that it feels foreign, even though it looks cool when you first see it. When people actually start to sit down and start implementing a project, or even, you know, their first little hello world type of application, if there is such a thing in workflow, they find that a lot of things are a little foreign.
You know, and I think that's the case. And I think it's just to kind of follow up with that, I always explain workflow as, you know what, folks, it's just an API. It's system.workflow. You know, it's just an API. And you build on top of it whatever you want. And it sort of takes out the mystery of the drag and drop and all the stuff, you know, all the demos that people normally see with it, you know?
Well, exactly. And I mean, another way to sort of lessen that barrier to make it less intimidating is that, especially with the workflow 3.0 activities that shipped, most of those activities that you put in your workflow do have sort of a one-to-one equivalence to a line of code, because they are things like an if statement, a while statement, and so on. But that actually is where the, you know, one of the other first barriers comes in, is that then you go, okay, I know how to do an if statement, I know how to do a while statement, that's easy. And then you sit down and try to figure out what all you have to do to do those equivalent things in workflow, and you find that it feels really cumbersome at first, because you have to do all this, you know, click there, or go to the properties window, pull up this dialog, put in some weird statements, and then finally all you really have is the equivalent of a single line of code. And you start going, now, why would I want to do this again?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where people start to break down. But sort of my thing that I use a lot of the times is, I mean, sort of to me, it's functional programming almost. You know, it's like I have a activity, and we'll sort of get into that here in a bit. But if I have an activity, it's really sort of a functional, it's really a procedure that I actually run. And the case I give people is, if you deploy your code, it's in a DLL, and now the business model changes and you need to move something above something else. Well, you're going to recompile and redeploy. And with workflow, is simply, you don't have to redo the code. You just executed the code in a different order. So you just simply move and drag it up or move it around. That can be done inside of the XML of the XAML workflows. And then you persist that and you pull it back out and you get a different execution path. And so from that angle, it starts to make more sense, you know?
Definitely. And I mean, that's actually kind of one of the things that I often point out as one of the big benefits of workflow, is that, just like you said, you have this, you know, very graphical and sort of intuitive approach to reorganizing your code. Because you can look at the code effectively in the designer, like you said, you need to reorder things. You just kind of drag things to a different order and you're done. You don't have to go kind of tracing through your code and making sure there's not side effects of, you know, someone else was calling that in a different order. What happens then? Everything's very explicit to you in graphical form there in the designer, and the ordering of execution is all enforced by the workflow itself. So there's sort of no mystery when you move things around like that of, is this going to affect some other workflow? That activity only, even though there may be copies or instances of that type of activity in other workflows, you know, that particular activity is only going to affect the workflow that you're using it in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Keith and Brian, you know, I'm kind of a newbie when it comes to workflow. So what is a activity?
The activities are kind of the atomic chunks of execution within a workflow, is one way to think about it. You can draw a direct analogy in some cases to just like a function in code. So it's a chunk of code that gets called, you know, at a technical level under the covers, it is a class that has an execute method that's called by the workflow when it's that activity's turn to run. But, you know, from a graphical perspective, if you're used to going to a whiteboard and drawing an activity diagram, you know, it's like the activities in your activity diagram. They're a point in the process where something happens. Now, the only place where that gets muddied a little bit is when you talk about state machine diagrams. You have state activities where really nothing is happening, even though there is sort of an execute that gets called under the covers. When you're sitting in a state activity, you're really idle and you wait for events to occur, which are kind of triggered through other activities nested inside of the state. And that's really where the execution is. But at kind of the primitive execution level, activities are the little chunks of execution that happen within a workflow.
Just to restate what Brian said, because workflow is really an API, you have system.workflow, you have an activity object. And so you create your own object and you inherit from that activity. And there's a couple of different types of classes. Brian, maybe you can help me out, but I can't remember what the actual name of it is right now. But you implement a class and then you implement, you write a class and you implement the activity, and it has an execute method, as Brian says, and whatever the execute method is, that's what it does. That could be as simple as printing console dot write line hello world, right? So you could have a activity that just does that one simple thing. But the cool thing about activities is when you build your own, you can actually create activities and you can give them icons and you can override the GDI drawing and the component. And so when you look at it from Visual Studio, it can look like just like the stuff out of the box, and you can create your own, drag them and drop them over, and they do a piece of work. Like, for example, we do loans, so you could have a pull credit workflow. That workflow could be a gigantic thing that it does behind the scenes. But a developer or a business analyst just goes, hey, I need to pull credit, drag, drop, and then they're done. And it does all the work behind the scenes.
Exactly. And you touched on a, you know, kind of an important distinction there, is that there's definitely the runtime behavior, which is what's most important in the end. But when you're talking about custom activities in particular, there is a big aspect here that, you know, there is design time behavior that's kind of inherent in the built-in activities. And if you're going to write an activity for any degree of reuse, then you want to be thinking about those design time behaviors. So there's things like you mentioned, you know, graphical aspects of what icon does it show, what kind of gradient background and coloring does it have. But there's also the more behavioral ones, which are things like activities can validate themselves within the designer. And so they know that I have properties A, B, and C always has to be provided, but maybe A and B are optional. And so they can provide a little error icon there if they're not filled out properly, basically. And you get actually compile time errors in Visual Studio. Another type of behavior you can have there is they can, through associated classes, which you tie in with attributes, you can basically say, okay, this particular activity is it accepts children, but only certain types of children. So some of the built-in activities do this where, you know, like a state activity, for example, which I mentioned before in state machines, there's only a set of, I think it's three or four, I can't think off the top of my head, particular activities it allows as children. And so part of its implementation is to have an associated designer class that looks at the activities that are being dropped into it as children and decides whether to accept those children or not based on their type.
Does that sort of make a little bit of sense?
Sure. So the other question I had, can you reach out into the Microsoft stack and interact with other things like Exchange and SQL Server? And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, under the covers, you know, like we just mentioned, bottom line is inside of an activity, there's an execute method. Once that gets called by the workflow runtime, you're basically just running on a thread from the thread pool, and you can do whatever you're capable of with the .NET framework. So, you know, any framework class you can get out to, third-party libraries, anything like that that at least makes sense within the execution context of workflow. You know, you're not going to fire up a third-party WPF user interface component and do anything meaningful with it, but you might send a signal to a user interface application to say, now display this.
You could take a message and write it to a queue, for example, and then that application could pick up the queue, and or you could, you know, do a, you could use, if you're using WCF, you can make a callback or, you know, something like that too. So
exactly, pretty much anything that you would think of as background activity. The one, it's not a true technical limitation, but it's a practical limitation with the current bits up through 3.5, is that you can't really do true asynchronous work. So you wouldn't like spin up a worker thread and do things asynchronously within an activity, because part of the core execution model in 3.5 is that within a workflow, you're actually always single threaded. You may jump from one thread to another as the workflow executes, but while the workflow is executing, it's only executing on a single thread. So even though there's kind of crazy things you could do to spin up another thread and use synchronization locks and try to stay within the execution model of workflow, it's pretty much discouraged to do that because you'll almost certainly get it wrong. But that does change somewhat in 4.0.
Okay, Brian, so if I wanted to learn workflow, how long would it take me to get comfortable with it to use in an application or a product?
Like with most technologies, it, you know, depends a lot on the individual, whether you actually do it through training or self-teaching and so on. But because there's a fair amount of complexity, and that's, you know, there's a number of downsides, I would say, to the current technology. There's a bunch of really big upsides too, but it's kind of I always describe it as the death by paper cuts, you know, experience with Windows workflow, because there are a lot of kind of annoying things as you get into it. And we've already mentioned a couple of those.
We're going to get those out of you during the Rusty Washer segment here in a bit. So don't spill those yet.
Try not to bash the technology too much. Yeah. But, you know, part of it, that it definitely factors into that. How long does it take to get productive? because, you know, like I mentioned, just something that seems very conceptually simple and in pure code would be very simple, like doing an if statement or doing a while loop. You first have to understand a number of supporting concepts, such as for both of those, you have to declare something called a condition. And a condition can either be a code condition or a declarative rule condition. And depending on which of those paths you take, then there's different ways of hooking it up in the code behind, and there's certain complexities associated with each one of those. Basically, the declarative rule condition is usually the easier way to go. It's more of a rules-based approach, and they sort of have a rule language in there that's sort of a hybrid between C# and VB in the current version. And again, that's going to change some in 4.0.
You know what, Woody? I'm going to give you a more like a dry and cut answer. I'm going to say 1 to 2 weeks. Not that I'm discounting what Brian said, because what he said is absolutely correct. There's a lot of stuff in there, but I'm going off of experience, sort of. So I spent about a week or two pounding on workflow pretty good, and I thought I had a pretty good handle on it. And I think if somebody can show somebody workflow, like spend an hour or two and like show them how things work and get them up to speed, they can usually pick it up, you know, pick most things up that they need in a week or two. Now, they won't be building custom activities from scratch, and they won't be, you know, they'll probably screw some things up. They probably won't be handling faults correctly and following best practices and stuff like that. But they could write something and it would work. I would say 1 to 2 weeks. It's a lot narrower scope, I would say, than WCF, wouldn't you, Brian?
Yeah, I totally agree with that estimate. You know, with someone who's a good learner and can either self-teach or get a couple days training on it, you can definitely be up and productive with it within a couple weeks. And I would say WCF is, it's hard to make a comparison to WCF because with workflow, there is a fairly sort of large foundational thing you need across the whole scope of workflow to start to be productive. A lot of people try to take that same approach with WCF, and then their heads explode with the complexity because there's so many permutations and things you can do with WCF. But really, if you approach WCF correctly, you know, if you first just try to use it as a simple remoting technology, it can actually be fairly simple if you ignore all the reliability and security and transactions and all the other things it's capable of. Just learn to do RPC calls with WCF, and it's pretty straightforward. And then you can incrementally learn the other features. So you can kind of ease your way into WCF, I think, a little more than you can ease your way into workflow. Workflow, you sort of have to take the big swallow and understand the way of going about things and the way you hook up activities and what the execution model is and what the host environment looks like and a lot of different aspects before you can, you know, really have anything meaningful in it.
Brian, if you had a bunch of people, maybe a company that came to you and said, hey, is this a good time to learn workflow, or is it a good time, or should people wait?
You've centered in on the hardest question of the night. That is the question I have the hardest time answering right now, and it gets worse every day. It's been one of these, like, you know, getting worse as time goes on, because the closer we get to workflow 4.0, the more it's not the right time to switch. It really depends on, you know, a company's got to assess. I just did a breakout session at TechEd on workflow services, and it was 3.5 focused, because that was sort of the mantra for TechEd. Other than a few sessions, they wanted to focus on shipping technology. But with workflow in particular, it feels a little negligent to, you know, tell some people or to just go out there and say, here's all the cool stuff you can do with workflow 3.5 today, without telling them, but if you're not going to really get seriously invested in it in the next, you know, 6 months, or specifically, you're not going to get close to production in the next 6 to 9 months, then you should probably hold off and wait. Workflow 4.0 is a very different beast. Almost every aspect of what you do in workflow changes to some degree. Now, it's not to say that everything you know about workflow today is lost, and your existing workflows, they're going to ship the 3.5 stack alongside the 4.0 stack, so your existing workflows will run just fine. And you can even take things like custom activities written in 3.5 and run them in new 4.0 workflows through an activity called an interop activity. But in terms of the, you know, particular way that you hook up an activity, which specific activities you'll be using, what your workflow definition itself looks like, what the host environment looks like, the way you define rules, almost every aspect of that changes in workflow 4.0. So if you're not going to get seriously invested in it in the near term, very near term, you're almost better off holding off and just learning 4.0 from scratch. And as of, you know, a couple of days ago, we now have a public beta of Visual Studio 2010 and .NET 4.0. So people can actually, you know, get started now with workflow 4.0. But obviously it's not going to ship for a while yet. So you have to align that with your delivery timelines of your own project and how much risk you want to take on by working against a beta.
You know what, Brian, I think that's a good segue for us to get into some rusty washers with workflow 3.0 and 3.5, and then we can jump into the new stuff on .NET 4.0. What do you say?
Sounds good.
All right, folks, let's do some rusty washers. Here we go. Those that don't know, we always talk about shiny pennies and rusty washers here on Deep Fried Bites. You ever heard about a new technology before? Seen it demoed at TechEd? You thought it was great. You took it back to the office. You showed your boss. You basically sold it to him. He bought into it. And then you got to production or got deeper down into it and you realized that it wasn't so shiny on top anymore. It turned into a rusty washer. So, Brian, what are some rusty washers in Workflow 3.0 and 3.5?
See, now that's an easy question because there's so many. like I said, you know, to a large degree, the initial impression working with workflow is death by paper cuts. There are, you know, even though technically the designer is a version 2 because the version 1 sort of shipped with the extensions to Visual Studio 2005, there was almost no change to the designer in Visual Studio 2008. So it's really still version 1.0, and it definitely feels like that in many cases. The designer will constantly complain at you for things that you can stare at and, you know, swear on your firstborn, everything you know about workflow, this is correct. And the workflow will tell you it's wrong. And a lot of times just, you know, closing the designer, reopening it will fix that. You'll also get these cases. There's one I've run into repeatedly where it will give you these errors where it says something like, type foo is not equal to type foo. And you can, you know, stare at the fully qualified namespace of those, and you can look at all your references and go, I'm pointing to the same type. You know, what the heck is it telling me here? And basically it's lying to you again, and it will keep lying to you. You know, it'll still compile, it'll run, everything works fine, but the designer still thinks there's a problem. It's kind of a known bug. There's a bunch of known bugs in the designer like this. So it's not anything that will, you know, stop you from getting to production or that are major stability problems or performance problems or anything like that, but they're just, you know, many little annoyances like that within the designer itself.
You know, one thing I want you to touch on, what do you think about like the infrastructure behind workflow? I always tell people that they have to invest in some other stuff, and because it is an API, you don't get, you know, a lot of extra stuff, you know, for free because it's just an API.
Exactly.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's another one of those barriers to adoption, but it's more of a perception thing than a problem with the technology. A lot of people come into workflow, they see the shiny demos and stuff, and they think they're getting a fully packaged workflow server solution with all the operations and management tools that they would expect to have for that. And like you said, and I usually present it the same way, this is a low-level API for developers. It's not a, you know, something you can just stand up a server in a production environment, throw some workflows at it, and you're ready to go. You actually have to write the hosting and execution environment yourself. If you want to have operations management tools to know what workflows are running and, you know, to start and stop those things and to track statistics on those, the infrastructure itself, the APIs at the framework level will capture all that types of information for you. And there's APIs to do things like start, stop, resume, and so on. But there's not sort of end user tools that ship with the product to do those things. So like you mentioned, a lot to, you know, really deliver a workflow solution, you have to write a lot of infrastructure tools to harvest some of that information that the framework can pump out for you. Specifically, two features are persistence and tracking. Persistence lets you sort of pause and resume your workflows and get them out of memory when they're not executing. And tracking lets you monitor, you know, down to a very granular level exactly what workflow instances are running, what activities are running. You can pump out custom information or data from your activities and so on. But all the framework supports is the push it to the database part. As far as harvesting that information and making it useful, that's totally up to you in the current bits. Now, the Dublin server that's coming in the 4.0 timeframe is going to solve a lot of that and bring some management tools to us out of the box. And as I understand it, that's going to ship as part of Windows Server standard version as a free thing now.
Mm-hmm. It is. You know, one of the things you mentioned was persistence and tracking. Now, they're not to mislead everybody, but there are SQL persistent tables and providers that are shipped with workflow. If you go into c:\windows.microsoft.net/framework/v3.0/workflow-foundation/sql/whatever language you have, you will see that there are, I think, four.
Yep, four scripts.
There are four SQL scripts in there. And I've said that so much that I can memorize it. But yep. Anyway, you that's where they are. So you take those SQL scripts and you can put them into SQL Server, and then you plug in the SQL persistence and the tracking persistence, and workflow will just use those right out of the box. But, you know, to tie in what Brian said is that usually what happens is they are okay. They'll work in about 60% or 70% of the cases. And then when you want to do something else, you're going to wind up modifying it and sort of altering that. So then you're building out more infrastructure.
Yep. You know, one of the most common things that comes up relative to that, I think I got asked the same question about 5 times at TechEd last week, is, you know, common scenarios where you'd be using workflow is some kind of backend system that's doing something like a loan application process or, you know, document approval processes, those kind of things. And so there's always, you know, one of the reasons for using a workflow technology is that it's stateful and long running. And you can store the state within the workflow and manage it from the workflow. But inevitably, there is always a need for sort of random access, ad hoc query of where am I at? What's the status of that state? And so there's a tendency to go, well, the workflow is stateful. I can just store it in the workflow and query the workflow for it. And technically, you can. But to do that, you basically have to get the workflow loaded back up if it's been persisted out to the database, just to ask what amounts to a very simple question, like, you know, am I in the approved or rejected state? And so, you know, what I usually recommend to people is just go ahead and pump that information out to some relational tables that you own that you can just query ad hoc yourself from a web service or whatever's appropriate for your architecture. Don't try to invoke the whole workflow architecture itself. Just ask simple questions that, you know, you could sort of take snapshots out and push those out of your workflow so that you don't have to rehydrate the whole workflow and get it loaded back up and use the semi-obscure ways of talking to a workflow to obtain that information.
That's very good advice, Brian. Very good.
Is Microsoft using or dogfooding workflow internally?
Oh, definitely. You know, that's one of the other questions I get asked a lot as well. You know, adoption is so low, isn't it really risky to actually jump on the workflow bandwagon, because it could just go away. If no one's using it, maybe they'll just kill it. And the fact is, you know, one of the biggest reasons Microsoft created workflow is because internally they were tired of writing a bunch of workflow engines for each product that they wrote. They wanted a single common foundation. So, I mean, there's already shipping products. Obviously, SharePoint 2007, you know, lets you create your own workflows within the product, and that's using workflow foundation under the covers. Speech Server uses Workflow Foundation, and there are a bunch of other products, server-type products that need workflowy type things that they're planning or already in the process of using it for. I'm not sure what the final determination on this ever was, but I heard rumors that, like, SQL integration services, because that you basically, you know, draw out diagrams of how you're going to push and pull data around. I think they were planning on rewriting that on top of workflow. And BizTalk itself, there's been talk of, you know, I'm not sure exactly where this comes into the timeline, but they are definitely eventually planning on discarding the current orchestration engine and replacing it with Windows Workflow.
What about Office?
Where in Office are you talking about? I mean, certainly tied in with SharePoint with things like document approval process and notifications and list management and that kind of thing. Are there other places you're thinking of?
I had heard as a rumor, and I was kind of looking for you to validate it for me, but maybe I'm totally off base. Maybe somebody can comment on the, on our site about it. But I was told at one time that in Office and like in Outlook, for example, when you schedule an appointment or something, there's a lot of rules that have to take place. Like you can't accept your own request if you created it, right?
Sure.
You can't send this to this, or you have to be within this time frame, and you can't pick the date because it was this is not scheduled and da 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 da. And I was told that Workflow was used in that.
I'm not aware.
But I have no validation on that, so I could be completely off base, Brian.
Yeah, with the current product, I'm not aware of it being used for that. There's certainly potential, especially with Workflow 4.0. The rules engine's been completely revamped along with a lot of other things. And there's certainly potential to just use the rules engine from Workflow for declaring and executing those rules. But that would have to come down in a future version of Office. I'm not sure if, you know, there may be some of that in like Office 2010. I haven't really looked that closely at what's coming in the next version of Office yet.
Okay. So we all know that SharePoint is getting a lot of attention right now. A lot of people are doing a lot of stuff in it. What's the place of Workflow inside SharePoint?
Well, you know, it ties back to one of my earlier statements about the low adoption is that I have no, you know, detailed numbers or studies to back this up, but my impression from working with a lot of customers in the industry is that Workflow adoption overall is low. And of the adoption, probably 70 to 80% of the adoption is because they're doing SharePoint and they take advantage of the Workflow capabilities in SharePoint 2007.
That's interesting.
And part of the reason for that is in .NET 3.5, like I mentioned, out of the box, most of the activities or pretty much all the activities that ship are really low-level control statements. There's not anything that actually gets meaningful work done for a given domain. You pretty much have to write custom activities for that, for back-end, you know, business applications. But with SharePoint ships out of the box with a bunch of, you know, what are effectively custom activities for SharePoint that let you do things where you can actually, you know, basically fulfill the dream of Windows Workflow, which is that non-programmers can sit down and drag and drop their way to a functional workflow by just putting activities on a diagram, filling in some properties, and basically being done without having to write any code behind. And that's because there are, you know, activities for, like I said, list management, document approval processes, things like that that are sort of inherent functions of SharePoint. They wrote a set of activities that ship with SharePoint that let you invoke those things from a workflow. So that's why it's in, you know, a lot of the adoption is there in SharePoint, is because you can get the benefit without having to be a workflow programmer per se.
That's interesting. So are they trying to focus that in on the like a business analyst type of user?
Well, that's sort of, you know, that's part of the dream of Workflow, is that they envision that, you know, what we have now is sort of this baseline foundational technology that over time people will build libraries of activities for given domains. So, you know, it ties into the concept of domain-specific languages, even though a lot of that is taking a different tack these days. You know, the idea is that for a given domain, say you're in the, you know, shipping and receiving business, you could potentially write across a bunch of different shipping and receiving companies, there's probably some common domain constructs and ways you go about doing things, you know, things that are industry standards and so on. So you could conceptually write a collection of workflow activities that just expose properties where you could configure and say, you know, we're on a net 30 this, whatever the, you know, right terminology is in a given domain, to declaratively say, this is, you know, how we want to handle this step in the process. And if someone writes those activities, then you have this opportunity to have a workflow designer in your own standalone application and let business analysts, basically that type of person, you know, someone who can't necessarily write code but can think technically and figure out the right flow of execution, they can basically drag and drop their way to a solution. Or another one would be, you know, a common scenario I've heard is like a doctor's office, having the, you know, the office manager be able to configure the workflows of what do we do for insurance claim processing across a set of different insurance companies.
So what do you think about that? What's your personal view?
Well, with the current technology, I haven't really seen anyone get there yet. SharePoint's the closest thing to it, where it's not a specific vertical domain like the examples I was giving, but it's more a horizontal domain where, you know, you can build any kind of app on top of SharePoint, but when you're in the SharePoint environment, there's a particular, you know, fairly restrictive set of things you can do with the constructs of SharePoint. So for that kind of thing, you know, definitely there's capability there, and they're filling in that space more in Workflow 4.0. I mentioned, you know, there's lots of new activities that ship with 4.0. Some of those are common constructs like, you know, sending email. There's been samples of that out there, but nothing officially released from Microsoft. So there's like an email activity. There's activities for just doing CRUD operations against a database. You know, being able to specify what's the query and what's the connection string, and that's really all you need at that point to pull data into or push data out of your workflow. So there's lots of things like that that are sort of moving some of those specific things into the framework more. But the vertical domain examples, I'm sure there's people out there doing it. I just, you know, none of the customers I've worked with have gotten that far with it.
Well, guys, I think that's a great stopping point right there. Why don't we hold up right here? We'll go ahead and cut this as part one of this talk. We've got a lot more questions for you, Brian, that we need to get out. We need to cover some more performance things and also get into a lot of stuff about what's coming and changing in Workflow 4.0. So we definitely want to have time for that. We thank you for tuning in to today's show. We hope you'll come back for the second part of Workflow Foundation with Brian Noyes. We'll be pushing that out here shortly. As always, you can reach us online at twitter.com/deepfriedbytes. You follow us, we'll follow you. That's how it works. Also, you can contact us on email at comments@deepfriedbytes.com. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know how we're doing and also any show suggestions that you may have. Until next time, folks, keep those tea glasses full and those axes sharp. We'll see you next time. Part 2 with Workflow Foundation with Brian Noyes. Have a good one.